हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधार शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So then, last class, then we were discussing about the creation. So then we went through the primary and the secondary creation. I don't know if it'll go from that here. So in the primary, then the important element is that the Lord is creating everything. He's actually establishing everything. Because there's the ideas, you know, how it just randomly happens, but no, it's coming directly from the Lord. So He establishes everything. Then after establishing everything, then Lord Brahma takes that and He then recreates with that. We say recreation because that's always going on. It goes on many times in the day of Brahma, it goes on at the end of the day of Brahma, then the next universe at the end of Brahma's life, and it's again recreation. So that's why it's generally called recreation, visarga. Or Prabhupada translates it, the secondary creation, like that. It means we see it as creation, but actually it's recreation. Because he's just doing again what's already been established by the Lord. So then, then it brings us down to the point where that the law then is the ability to discern between right and wrong. This element then is established. Does that make some sense? Because this is where you can tell what is right, what's not, what to apply, what not to apply. And then the last point is that the Vishnu, he's the origin of the sacred law. So then, ending here on the second page, then we have the 1A, 2, 3. Lord Vishnu as the origin of the sacred law. After the Lord taught these institutes to me, I taught them to the other sages. Bhrigu will now recite to you these institutes, having learned them from me. So now Bhrigu takes up the recitation. Being thus addressed, Bhrigu spoke to the sages, "Listen." Now he describes the Manus. Six other high-minded... Yeah, because Brahma's already... He's already described his appearance, the Prajapati's appearance, and the appearance of all the species of life, down to this point of discriminating right from wrong. So now, after this, then now it is time for Bhrigu's speech, because this belongs... goes from Manu. Manu is in charge of seeing that the human beings know what to do not to do. Therefore now, this is actually where the main points are starting to come up. That's why I would split it at this point between the Prajapatis and the Manus. Right? One might think you would complete the whole secondary creation process. But now the Manus now are taking up the duty. Six other high-minded, very powerful Manus are Sardo Krisha, Atami, Tamasa, Raivata, Chakshusha, and the son of Vaivasvat. So that's Vaivasvata Manu. So we're in the Vaivasvat now. These Manus, headed by Swayambhuva, produced and protected the creation. So Swayambhuva is the seventh. So he was the original. And from him, then the others are coming. Time. Then you have a description of the earthly time that we know of. So we have our day. You know, our day is divided up. You have, it comes up from, you know, very, very minor points in time. What do they use? The Bhagavatam uses the time it takes the ray of light to go over an atom. It starts from there. And they start from a blinking of the eye. How long an eye blinks, then from that, then they start the time. So that's also another consideration. So that brings it up to what you call muhurtas. They're made out of dandas, right? You get two dandas to a muhurta, so 24 minutes, so 48 minutes. And so like this, you have 30. And so 60 of them, we get a day. 30 in the day, 30 in the night. So then from that, then you go into the day and night of the mains. So for us, then 30 days, you know, is a month. For them, for the mains, it means the forefathers, for them a month is one of their days and nights. So when the sun, when the moon is going down, is waning, then it's their daytime, and when it's waxing, it's their night. Then it goes into the day and night of the gods. So then the gods, then it's like one of our years, that's one of their full 24 hours. So when the sun is going towards the south, it's their night. Then when it's going towards the north, it's their day. So right now we're in the end of their day. This is like Brahma Muhurta for the demigods now. It means they're all up now doing their morning duties and all that. So then this next month at the Makara Sankranti, then that's when their daytime starts. The sun will rise for them at that time. And so that will go until like June, July, like that. Then the sun will set for them, and then it's their night. Then the four yugas. Then you have the Satyakali, Treta, and Dwapara. And then the Mahayuga is then you have those four ages together. That's one considered one Mahayuga. And then of those Mahayugas, you have 72 of them. Then they are Indra's lifetime, like that. And then from there, then there's 14 of them in a day of Brahma, and then that's his day. And then he sleeps for his, then his night is as long. And like that, then there's 360 days, and then there's 100 years. So it's said that one who knows time like this, the day and night, only those knowing the day and night of Brahma are acquainted with time. In other words, you can only know Brahma's day if you know the whole thing. From the smallest time up to Brahma's time, then you're said to know time, like that. You know, that's so in the Vedas, that's called time, not just learning to read the clock, but you should know what the clock is based on, how it's functioning. That's always yes. Well, it's just like you have the prime minister, right? So he runs his office, that runs the country. But, you know, it has all the people that do the work and the different things. But he is also a person, and he has his own personal life. So that's their office. You don't have to sit in your office all day. It's not every time you blink, then, you know, the demigod is there pushing a button or something like that. No, they have their office. By their potency, it all goes on. So their energies take care of everything. You know, just like Krishna's energy is Lakshmi, Shiva's energy is Parvati. That's just their energies. Through that, everything gets done. It's like that. So they all have their potency, and then whatever is their office, then it gets done. Like that. Does that make some sense? Yeah? Because anytime there's a question, feel free to ask, because we're just going through, and as they come up, then we'll deal. Yeah, okay. Creation and modification of the mind. So after awakening, he was asleep, created mind. So now we're going back to Brahma closed with this, that the Lord, he takes rest and then everything goes to sleep. So when he goes to sleep, then it all goes, because he's actually running everything. He only uses them as, in other words, the demigod wants to feel that he is taking care. So then Krishna lets them do that office, but it's actually him doing it. You know, it's like the secretary can feel he's doing things, but it's actually the minister that actually gets it. So the same way the Lord is actually the one doing, but he does it through that office. So when he sleeps, then everything goes to sleep. So you'll find that principle there. So now he's going up when he wakes up again. After awakening, he was asleep, created mind, which is both real and unreal. Real in that it exists, real that it can perceive reality, but unreal in that it tends to attach itself to, a false conception of the material energy. That's generally what it attaches oneself to. You know, we have this idea of what it is, like we attach ourselves to the body or to our facilities or to, you know, any concept that anyone has. So that is of value, then that has to be seen if that's real or not. Right? Reality is that it's of actual value. It's connected to the Lord because he's reality. If it's not connected to him, then it's not real. Does that make some sense? This is a very important point in the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. All Vaishnava philosophy is here, is what's connected to the Lord is real, what's not connected is not real. Even though it may look exactly the same. Right? Because that's the whole point, is that we become attached, like we see in the Bhagavatam. So many times it happens. Chitraketu, very attached to his son, right? Worked very hard to get his son. His wife's killed the son. Then he's lamenting, so Narad Muni comes to Parvati Muni, and they bring the son back to life. And then he's so happy, oh, my son! And then his son says, who are you? He's kind of like, well, I'm your father, don't you remember? Says, which one? Every life I have a mother and father. So which one are you? So he's making the point is that the souls come together like the straws in a river, and then they go apart. They're not. It's not fixed. It just moves. So the conditioned natures match. Whatever is supposed to be together comes together, and interacts together. But then after that, then it moves on. So that's why to get attached to that is a difficulty. To engage the attachments in that, that's for pleasing the Lord, then that's real. Right? But to think that it itself is actually going to bring happiness hasn't brought anyone happiness. That's the thing. To actually think that money, wealth, position, family, anything that is there in the material will actually give happiness, that's unreal. That's illusion. But recognizing that those attachments are there, so therefore engaging those attachments in the Lord's service, that's real. Right? Because it connects to the Lord. The other one, it doesn't have any meaning. It's all just Krishna's energy. Does that make some sense? So that's it. Like you take two rocks out of the garden, put them together. If I say, ha, see, they're very attached. You just say, ridiculous. They're not conscious. But the point is the body conscious? Is the mind conscious? Is the intelligence conscious? Or is the soul conscious? Yeah. So the point is you put two lumps of dead matter together at the same place, and you call them by whatever you want to call them, husband, wife, mother and father, sister and brother, or whatever, friends, anything you want to call it. But those bodies actually don't have any relationship. It's only because the souls think they do, but the souls don't have relationship on that platform. So that's the thing. The soul projects into the dead matter and then says, I have this relationship. So then you count it as real. So the concept of those rasas, that's real. The concept that you can use whatever is the conditioned nature in those rasas in the Lord's service is real. But to take those relationships themselves as real, real in the sense meaning that they have value on their own. You understand? They themselves have some significant value on their own. Then that's illusion. So the point is since we have this conditioned nature, We are attached to the material energy. We have these illusions. Then we take those illusions and, in a favorable way, engage them through those kind of attachments we have in the Lord's service. That becomes reality. So that both brings us to the proper consciousness and it takes us out of the material world. So that's why the path, using the path of poverty in the Lord's service is not a problem. But it has to be done with the mentality of nivritti. That's why knowledge is there. Is that understood? It means one can be in the house, one can be in the family, do all the things that one would normally consider as attachment. But the mentality is that this is being done for Krishna. The results are Krishna's. You know who you are. Then, even in that path, it becomes converted to nivritti. Right? And it will free you from the material energy. That's the beauty of the system. So only actually devotees understand this and can operate it, because only they know the Lord. Right? Theoretically, the impersonalists could also operate this system. But because they don't know the Lord, they don't actually know how to engage it in this service. So therefore, they have to give it up. So then their path, nivritti, means that of renunciation. You know, externally. Though internally, then they're thinking if they're God, then it's all theirs anyway. So they've given everything up, but it's all theirs anyway. It's just, you know, doesn't mean anything. But in the pravriti, then one takes what one has and engages in the Lord's service. Of course, you can take nivriti and engage it in the Lord's service. Devotees can. So therefore, it doesn't really matter where you situate yourself. But whichever you situate, it should be done properly. That's the principle. From the mind modifying itself is produced ether. So when the mind modifies, you get ether. So each one comes out of the last. The quality of ether is sound. From ether modifying itself springs the wind, possessing the quality of touch. From wind modifying itself proceeds light, possessing the quality of color. From light comes water, possessing taste. From water, earth, which has smell. Then it gives the period of the manus, we mentioned. The manvantara's creation and destruction of the world are numberless. So it's always going on. Because it's not just this world. There's unlimited other universes, and they're constantly going on. Like that. So even at this time, there's unlimited other creations going on, doing exactly the same thing. Manu makes that point later, is that what goes on in this universe, every creation is exactly the same. Because the Lord made the blueprint, so in every universe they do the same thing. So there's an idea that it's different. No, it's the same thing. But depending on what souls are in the universe, then they make available those things that they need. So sometimes you get a situation where what's required by the experience required by a particular soul is not available in this universe. So they'll transfer them to another universe because it's going on over there. But otherwise, generally, it's, you know, it's always going on like that. So it doesn't matter. And we've been in unlimited universes because every time the Lord breathes in, we go in, and when He breathes out, we come back out in another universe. So we're not always in the same universe because that universe disappeared. Right? The material energy, pradhan, is the same. But its particular manifestation in the particular universe, that is, you know, broken up into pieces. Like that. Does that make sense? Okay. So all this is to create the understanding is that one has to become aware that there's beyond what we have. Right? The whole purpose is consciousness. You can take anything and through that become conscious and then add Krishna to that. You know, just like you want to cook nicely. You have to be very conscious what's going on. Otherwise you'll burn it, you know, things will be overcooked, undercooked. So many things you have to do, how many order things, how you cut it, what kind of pot you use, what kind of heat you use, what order you put the ingredients in, what proportions. So you have to be very conscious. So if one becomes very conscious of all those things, then being conscious of all that, how you say? Yeah, being conscious of all that, then one can use that in Krishna consciousness. Point is to become conscious. Therefore, you see, is that it's natural that then, in this scenario, that we see the women are very conscious, Right? They're conscious of, you know, what everybody else is wearing, what everyone's doing, how they moved, why they moved that way, why they said this, why they said that. You know, there's a whole thing. Men don't generally take that much attention. You know, the lady could walk in a nice silk, you know, Banari sari, or walk in a potato sack. You probably wouldn't notice the difference much. A few would, but most wouldn't. You know, so they don't get into these things. Why he did it, you know, why the other guy did that, who cares? He may have noticed he did it, but who cares? They don't contemplate it, they don't get into it. So women are very conscious of everything, how this, the cloth, or this, so many different things. So therefore, that consciousness then has to be used, because the energy is so much put into the material energy and conscious of it, one has to be able to connect that energy into Krishna consciousness. Right? It has to be connected. So that's the point, is consciousness is already there, but now it's being aware that there's something beyond the sphere that you function in. Because the tendency is whatever sphere someone works in, they figure that is the world. Right? I mean, that was the... original Woodstock, right? We are the world, right? There's, what, 100,000 people there, or whatever it was, and that was it, right? There's a few billion other people doing something completely different. But they feel they're the world, right? You got the sports world, you got the, you know, fashion world, you got the this political world, you got everyone. And it moves independent of the other ones. Their whole social scene, their language, their everything is all absorbed in that. And otherwise, and it doesn't function outside of that. Sometimes different worlds meet for a moment, and that may not be the most pleasant of meetings, but whatever it is, then it happens. But that's the tendency, is you think this is your world. So the whole idea of this, these descriptions in Manu is to wake us up that there is beyond that world. Because if being shown this, one sticks to one's world, then one's a fool. That's all. One's an unintelligent fool, because intelligence means to be able to discriminate. Intelligence isn't how many facts and figures you have. Intelligence is the ability to discriminate. And then discriminate between what's right and wrong. So how will decide what's right and wrong? Who sets the standard? Because you can have unlimited standards. Everybody's got an idea of what is right, what is wrong. Right? By their own opinion. So then how you'll get everybody to function together as a society, unless you have a common standard. And basically the only one that basically everybody will accept is God. Because otherwise we'll always figure that we're superior to someone else, and we won't accept their idea. So God's idea, then everybody follows that, and it works. Does that make sense? So the whole idea is to awaken ourselves to the bigger picture of what's going on. And then in that picture, see what we're doing. And then now do what we're doing, you know, function in our world with a changed consciousness. Like that. That's the whole idea of it. So that's why many times you see they'll take it back and look at it very big and then go back down and very bad, you know, like this.
Maharaj,
yes.
Talking about the blueprints, I didn't understand that. The same thing happens since what happens again and again,
it means the 8,400,000 species, what they look like, what they do, what is their nature, is exactly the same. Every creation in this universe and every creation in every other universe, and between this universe and the next universe, exactly the same. It's always the same. You still always have three modes of nature, always have 8,400,000 species of life, always have these same time elements, always have Brahma, Prajapatis, Manus, like this. It's always the same.
And how is it different from the other universe? All the universes have the same, you know, Brahma and Prajapati?
They have everything the same, they just have different souls in them. So how the universe is arranged is depending upon what the souls need. That's why in the Gita it says the souls are maintaining the universe. There's no need for the universe if the souls aren't conditioned. Because they're conditioned, therefore they need this. They have this desire, or because of that desire, they need this particular reaction to happen to them. Therefore, then the universe arranges it. So that's why sin is considered such a big problem, because you mess up the universal management. You do something you're not supposed to do, then they have to change the whole structure. just to accommodate that. This person was, this animal was supposed to live for this long. You've killed it. So now they have to arrange for that animal to be take birth again and continue exactly in the same experience where they left off. So that wasn't necessary. So therefore there's a reaction. They were living there perfectly fine. You didn't have to come and bother them. So now they have to arrange these things. Because free will is there. Like that. Of course, there's the element of karma that's already going on. But you can also do new, you can start new karma. You're not just always going on the old one. You can start new stuff also. Getting rid of old stuff, that's a problem. But new stuff, you can always start. You can always add more nonsense on. Like that. Getting rid of it, that's a bit of work. Does that make sense? So it's always the same. That's why it said chewing the chew. It's the same old thing. Everybody's already done it. But, because it's new to us. Does that make sense? It's like you're sitting in the train and it goes by and it's new. Oh, wow, look at this. But the local people have been looking at those fields, every day of their life. But for us, hey, this is nice, new, For them, it's like, they're watching the train go by. Oh, hey, the train. Like that. So that's the... Does that make sense? And the qualities of the ages. Then religion. In the Krita age, Dharma is four-footed and complete. 4 feet means it has the four qualities of truthfulness, austerity, purity, and... Did I say truthfulness? Is that truthfulness? And mercy. Like that. In the other ages, Dharma is deprived of 1 foot by theft, falsehood, and fraud. Those will always reduce it. The life of mortals is proportioned according to the character of the age. Means the more qualities, then the longer the life, the shorter, then the shorter it becomes. Various duties are prescribed for the various ages. In Krita, austerity, Treta, knowledge, Dwapara, sacrifices, and Kali, liberality alone. Liberality meaning charity. Charity and forgiveness like that. So then topic, okay, then we go to topic 1B. So that finishes the creation. So that's brought it down to, okay, now the qualities, ages, everything, and now what are they supposed to do? Right? So then that means whichever age it's in, because Manu is for all four ages. So they will come across things that sometimes aren't for this age, like that. So, because he's talking for everybody. Just like in the law books, you have laws in everything, though they may not apply to you. But if they do, then they're there. And if they don't, they don't. Like Prabhupada mentioned, there's 5 things that don't apply in this age. So you have, cow sacrifice, horse sacrifice, niyoga. Niyoga means begetting the child on the brother's wife. If the brother is unable to do that or he dies. Impersonal sannyas. And, non-vegetarian offerings to the forefathers. Like that. So those are, in other words, these other animal sacrifices. So basically, that is all bent. It's not allowed in Kali Yuga because people don't have the proper mentality. Not that they're important because they're only for karma conduct. So in one sense, it's a blessing because then there's less distraction. It's more easy to focus on the spiritual values. But those aren't there. So Manu deals with all those 5 anyway because the other 3 ages, they apply like that. Some will say this is for a different time. No, it's for all ages. That's why Manu is the main. All of the Dharma Shastras are after that. Right? They're in connection to dealing in different areas more. Some deals with only 1 age. Some deals with only a particular aspect like that. But Manu is like the complete law. So, topic 1b. The origin of the sacred law. Then, the God-given duties of men. The separate duties of those from the Lord's mouth, arms, thighs, and feet. Duties of the 4 Varnas. To Brahmanas he assigned teaching and studying the Veda. The Kshatriya he commanded to protect the people. The Vaishya to tend cattle, trade, lend money, and cultivate land. to the Sudra to serve without resentment these other three varnas. So that those what's mentioned there, that's the essence. Everything else is built on that. Right? To protect, therefore they have to have army, they have to have revenue, they have to have forts, they have to have the whole political system, they have to have the whole administrative system, all that goes. But it's only for the purpose of protecting. Right? Because sometimes they say, what is a kshatriya? You know, generally we think, fighter, this, that. No, he's only a fighter so he can protect. Right? So that's the main thing, because if he fights, he takes taxes but doesn't protect, then he's actually not a good king. Like that. So protection. Brahmins have so many duties, but the real thing is to study and teach. That's the main thing. Then if they do other aspects, that's also fine. But that's the essence. The Vaishya must create economic development. If he doesn't, it's not happening. And the Shudra must serve. And it mentions here the mood without resentment. Because this, it needs to be done. It's his nature. Point is if he could do the other things, great. Then he could function there. But that means he can do it with that mentality. Right? Because, okay, to administrate, so many people want to do. Or to manage, everybody wants to do. But unless you're protecting through that administration, then you're situated in the wrong position. If you're doing business, this, that, you're not making money. You're in the wrong profession. Right? You're doing your rabbinical duties, but you're not studying and teaching. You're in the wrong profession. Right? So that's the meaning of it. You can expand from there however great or broad the person's abilities are. But unless those four are in place, it doesn't happen. Because if you're not studying, you're not teaching someone, then your ritual is dead. It has no meaning. It's just ritual. Then it's smarta. Does that make sense? So these are the essence. And you'll see these four come up again and again and again. Because that's what's being driven home. Though all details of everything else connected to it will be explained. But it always goes back to those points. So if those are in place, everything works. If it's not in place, it doesn't work. The glory of the Brahminical order. The very birth of a Brahmin is an eternal incarnation of the sacred law. A Brahmin is born to protect the treasury of the law. It means he's supposed to practice it. You only protect it by having the knowledge, practicing it, giving it to others. That's why study is there. Study means they're practicing. Right? Teaching then means they're teaching, and in that they're also, they have to apply it. Because to teach someone, you have to show them. So then that keeps it alive.
So does that mean that the Brahmins are the judiciary?
Yeah, they're judiciary. Though the king himself will also do. But they are the embodiment of the law, and that they know the law, they do. They may or may not sit in the court. But if the king doesn't do it himself personally, then Brahmins do it. He generally doesn't give it to someone else. Or his prime minister. And generally prime ministers are like Brahmins. They generally are Brahmins, but sometimes they're not. Like Vidura was the prime minister for Dhritarashtra. He's not a Brahmin. But he has that knowledge of the law, he has the knowledge of the things, so he knows what it takes to be one, therefore he is one. So that's the other interesting thing, is even though we see within the, you have the pure Vedic society where it's not by birth, it's by your nature. You simply see that, and then you do. Then you have something like we see like in Dwapara Yuga at the end, it's kind of in between. They put a lot of emphasis on birth, but at the same time, as depending upon their nature, they deal with them. Like that. Like for some, because Karna had a Kshatriya nature, he was accepted as such, and he was given the duties of such. For others, they saw even though he could perform the duties, he didn't have the mentality of a Kshatriya. Therefore, they didn't accept him.
Yeah. Is right? That
because he was too arrogant? Yeah. It means, what does he care? Drona is showing his disciples to the citizens so that they will be inspired that yes, now the next generation is trained, they're qualified to lead the kingdom when they take the seat, everything will work perfectly. That's the whole purpose of showing. They don't need to show anybody, they know what they can do. So then the people are satisfied that, now there's a new generation and the Kuru dynasty is expanding, so then they'll be prosperous, so they'll be peaceful. Karna has to come in and say, I can do whatever they've done. Who asked him? You know? Because, you know, so that's the point. I said, that's why Drona didn't accept him, because he had the wrong attitude.
Why did it move from nature to birth? Why did it change?
Because when people don't have actually the nature, then they'll go on their birth. They're born in a Brahmin family, therefore a Brahmin, though they don't have the nature. Yeah. That's generally how it comes out. It's a very common thing, like that, because the last manifestation from subtle comes gross. So the body is there, so we identify with the body, we put everything with the body. So if our body's in a good position, then we say that we're senior. If it's in a less position, we say we're junior. So it's there anywhere, it's inherent. Even in the Daivavarna ashram, you still have levels according to bodily designations or birth or things like that, if they're doing the function of that. But at the same time, it doesn't go, you see, underlying, if they don't carry that nature, they're not accepted that way. Like that. Though even a Brahmin, if he claims to be a Brahmin, then they'll give him they'll deal with him nicely. And giving charity to him, you get double the amount than if you gave it to just a common person. But if you give it to a real trained Brahmin, it's 100,000 times. So even the Vedas, it's a little more considerate. Just that he claims to be a Brahmin. Like you see Jarasandha. Krishna, Arjuna, and Bhima claim to be Brahmins, so he dealt with them like that. Because you claim I'm dealing with you like that, but from all symptoms that I see, you're Kshatriyas. Your physique, you have the marks on your shoulders of bowstrings. You didn't come through the gate for Brahmins, you came over the wall, you know, like that, and you broke the top of the mountain, you broke the drums. You made trouble when you walked down the street snatching things, and you know, you're covered in garlands and sandalwood paste and all that, and Brahmins wouldn't do this. So, but you claim to be, I'm dealing with you that way. Like that. If someone claims to be a Kshatriya or Vaishya, that doesn't work. It doesn't function like that. Only the Brahminical. So, but you see, it's very common to fall back to those things, you know, like that. It's a common thing. You'll always see that. You know, how you say one joined earlier, you know, then that's always a point of, it means it's a natural thing that you would be. Right? It's a natural thing because it's natural. Just like someone, if you follow the Vedic culture properly, only Brahmins marry Brahmins. So the genes are pure. So basically speaking, you can say that their child will have their nature. Right? So then he's born in a Brahmin family. Basically, you take it, he'll be a Brahmin. So you deal with them that way, because otherwise, how do you know until he grows up? Therefore, you'll see comments that the Brahmins dress in this way, the Kshatriyas this way, the Vaishyas when they go to Gurukul. But the real thing is what they do when they leave the Gurukul. That's when you actually categorize them. Because that's where the guna and karma goes. You know, even within the training, you could adjust that. The guna and karma can be adjusted. You know? So that's the principle. So then but what happens is in the when it degrades, then they don't make that distinction later. You know? And even they're born in those families, they don't have the qualities, but they go on just because they're born in those families. Okay, composition of the sacred law. In order to clearly settle everyone's duties, Manu composed the sacred law. So here when he's discussing here, then we can either mean Manu's composed it, means he gave it to us, or Manu meaning the Supreme Lord. Both of them are considered, in this case, Manu. And when it gets down to us, then it's coming from Swayambhuva, or now it'll be Vaivasvata Manu. He's the one that's now sitting in the seat.
How long does the period of
Vedas
last?
They last for 72 cycles of Mahayugas. So we're in the 28th now. Okay. We're in the 28th. He's of the cycle of so we're in the 28th Kali Yuga. Like that. And in the Kali Yuga we're in the first quarter. Like that. And we're at the 50, I think I think it's the 51st year of Lord Brahma. I think it's either he's 50 or 51. It's half of his life is over. So it's either it's 50 running or it's the 51st year. Like that. So that's the... So that's there. They know the time is there. They can tell you these things. You know, they know all these. Okay. Study of these institutes is the best means of securing welfare. The rule of conduct is transcendent law taught in revealed text and tradition. It means it's always functions. It's transcendent. It's even amazingly enough transcendent to Anglo-Saxons. Despite their superior complex that they feel that they're the lords of the world, it even transcends them. That's what it says here. Like that. So that's the thing. The first world feels that there's something special, but somehow or another, then here Manu has a different idea. He who duly follows the rule of conduct will obtain the full reward. Right? So it means if you follow it, you'll get the full reward. Now you can either do it for the full reward materially, or you can do it for the full reward spiritually. But by following it, you can get the full reward. Yes. Yeah, it means the principles always work. That's the thing. It's just like you take, let's say, cooking. You go into a kitchen that's not well organized at all, but the same principles you'll still apply. You'll still apply heat. You'll still, the same way, you know, instead of having a nice karai that you can put the ghee in, it'll sit there nicely while you make the chaans, you have to take your big aluminum pot and put it on its edge like this to get it to create a puddle of ghee. You know, instead of having proper sized spoons or that, you're using some weird big old spoon. And yeah, you can still make it work. The principles always apply, though the so that's the expertise, is applying the principle to the detail. You know? It means you're taking the principle and figuring out what detail to apply in this situation. But this idea that it doesn't work, it's not well thought out. Because that means that it's not being understood that the world works on basic principles and always works that way. You know, management's the same. You know, like that. It means the principles that you see, you know, that all these ancient people talk about, the West is still based on them. It's like that. If things don't work, then how is it, like you take America administrative function, it's a monster country, it's holding together. But it's based on administrative principles that were developed by the Romans and the Greeks. Like that. So the point is if something works, it works. 1,000 years ago, they cooked their food on heat, and today they do it. So even if it's a microwave, still it's heat. That's the principle. So that doesn't change. So someone who's intelligent then wants to know, well, what is the principle that works? Otherwise, if one only goes for details, then he goes for a detail. It seemingly works today because everyone talks that and all that, and then tomorrow it changes, and you're left out in the cold. You've just spent thousands on books, on seminars, you've flown around the world to attend this and that, you've learned all the jargon, you're comfortable with it, it's happening, and now people say that's all dated and all that, and now no one wants to listen to you. So this is the problem. But the principles always work. So the smart person means one who can take those principles and apply them. Prabhupada used those principles. He didn't use anything. And he went anywhere, talked to anyone, you know, heads of countries, religious leaders, political leaders, social leaders, journalists, anyone, and he did fine with everyone. Even the seemingly most inimical or most issue-based, you know, persons, generally you look and Prabhupada speaks out, the person never gets past three comments. You know, they say something, Prabhupada makes a comment. They say another thing, Prabhupada makes another comment. They say another thing, then Prabhupada talks for the whole rest of the article. By that time, they're just listening and going, huh, yes, what's that? You know, he just knows how to do. So he's working on principles, how you deal. Yeah, but then that's Prabhupada's point, is he's not a personality cult. You know, the point is he is a person. Krishna is a person. We're all persons. So that has to be taken into consideration. But he's acharya, so he sets example on what's so. It's not that the others are not any less they're any less pure devotees. Right? But who we say are acharyas are the ones that they do the things that everybody else can do and will make progress. Right? Does that make sense? Just like you you have so many associates of the Lord, but only certain ones were considered acharya. Like Rupa and Sanatana are acharya. But we're not taking, Garadhar Pandit's guru. You know, he's not acharya. Because he's just living his life the way he lives it, you know, in the spiritual realm. So for him, he's just doing. But if he could easily do that office of being acharya, but it's that who is saying exactly what you do and everybody else can say it and do it and get the result, then it's safe. Because the acharya speaks, when he speaks, the neophyte, the madhyama, and the uttama get what they need to get out of it. While others, when they're not acting as acharya, they may only address the uttamas. So what they're saying is perfectly right, but anyone below that platform wouldn't be able to do it. You know, or sometimes they may say something for a madhyama. But the acharya speaks for all. So that's what's special. He comes to the madhyama platform, but he presents himself as a neophyte. Though he's a uttama.
Is that because he preaches what he does and preaches what he did all principles?
That's the point. So, therefore, Prabhupada says, do what I do. Mm-hmm. Right? But that's the point, is how is he doing it? How is he speaking? How is he uses logic, he uses grammar, he uses all these different things, you know? You go through, it's like, Prabhupada just uses the things because he knows how it works. Prabhupada knows how language works, therefore he makes up his own words. Right? Super soul. Is there a word, super soul? You know? Mellows. Right? You know, what does mellows mean in English? He creates these words. They're proper. No grammarians have ever opposed it. But no one's ever heard of them before. Like that. He can just create because he knows what language is. He knows what logic is. He knows all these things, therefore he can present it and make it happen for people. You know? So that's the principle that's going on. Is that okay? Okay. He who duly follows the rule of conduct will attain the full reward. For good conduct is the root of all austerity. Means if you're austere but you don't have good conduct, then what's the use? So good conduct is the basis of the whole thing. Therefore we see Vaishnava etiquette. That's why Haridas Thakur was special. He knew the philosophy, he preached it, he lived it. So his prachar, his achar, both were in line. Like that. This was what was special. So that's the Vedic principle, is that you may be good at all these, but your etiquette has to be proper. If the etiquette's not good, it doesn't have really much meaning, you know, like that. You can be special, you can have all, you know, so many wonderful talents, you can be, you know, exceptional in your field, but if you don't have good character, or you don't have, know the etiquette, it'll only create problems, like that. So that's the principle.
And that's like
karma again. That's it. Yeah, so he always means he had the kshatriya mood, but it wasn't enough. You know, his thing is, if you have a problem, just work it out by fighting. So he was heroic in that way. But when it, but otherwise, when it came down to it, it wasn't smart. You know, he had that bhav, because so many times Shakuni told him, he says, hey, you've been defeated by Arjuna so many times, and you're still talking fights. He says, you know, you're a fool. You know, like that. So they just go back and forth with
these things. Did he choose to be like that?
Huh?
Did he choose to be like that?
No, it's the way he is. See, because you have to remember, is trying to find a pleasant way to say it. He's born out of wedlock, so that means his nature, he's without samskar, he's got too much lust in him. So therefore his position and his lust for, you know, his position, means like anyone else is okay, they've this and that, they've had all these things, they got the nature, but you know, whatever it is, you know, he can be a chariot driver, he can be right out on the battlefield, he can help the kshatriya a lot. He could do so many things like that, but he's not satisfied, you know. He's just not satisfied. He has to be the big man, you know. So because of that, then it becomes a problem. So he's not able to balance it. You know, the Pandavas are out in the forest. They're just happy in the forest, you know. And if something comes up to show their prowess, they show it, but they don't go out of their way. What are these termites?
I don't know how to drive it.
Pretty expert, whoever they are. Maybe we should put them there. Can you just close the back windows? Go outside and just close them. They're coming in through there somehow. I don't know how. Are they coming? No, they're not coming. Unless they come under the door or something. Okay. As Manu formally promulgated these institutes, so learn ye also from me. So now he's saying, so now I'm going to tell you what the institutes are. So that's all the preliminaries now about the law, why it's there. Now he's going to say, now within the law, then how you deal with the law. Who should teach it? How you deal with it.
So institutes means the different topics.
Yeah, institutes means the particular laws themselves, the different topics of the law, the details of the law. You know, yeah, that and within those, then what are the laws within those things? So it's like that. So there it's, yeah. Okay, then discourse 2. Desire for results, the basis of action. Learn that sacred law followed by virtuous learned men, free from hatred. So virtuous men free from hatred, they follow the law. Those who are not free from hatred, it's difficult for them to follow the law because you have to be too forgiving to follow it. That's the problem. Like Yudhishthir, he was a perfect follower of the law, but he would always forgive. You know, sometimes his brothers appreciated that, and sometimes they didn't. To act from desire is not laudable, yet exemption from desire is not found. It means that you're doing the thing because you have a desire, then that's not good. But anybody working without desire has never been heard of. Everybody is there some goal that they're doing something. So then the real thing is what is your purpose of that desire? What is your goal? So for devotees, then that goal means that they're serving the Lord. Right? That's their purpose. And the other then is for material benefit. So that's the thing, is we're only going to do something because we have a goal. So that means there must be a desire. But if it's to please Krishna, then it's okay. But if it's not to please Krishna, then we'll find to that much it will be entangling. We have to be careful. On desire, sacrifices, vows, and laws are kept with the idea of reward. In other words, people do something good because they figure I'll get a better result from it than if I do something bad. So therefore, it's not considered bad because then people do good things. You know, and then you can take to the next step is that the desire to please the Lord, you have a transcendental desire, then takes it to this actual proper. But at least they follow. Not a single act ever appears to be done by a man free from desire. He who persists in discharging prescribed duties reaches the deathless state. So here, now, we'll find this is where the language is there of this particular book. It has its own special language. Is that...
Marge, is there any way to get them
out? Not that I know of. But maybe you could put something just under the bottom of the door in case they're coming in that way. Because otherwise it's not really seen how they could get in because everything's shut. Oh, they come through those holes up there. Is that it? Oh, okay. That makes sense. Okay, hey, forget the door. They seem to have found another way in. That's why the oil lamps are so nice. Cause it doesn't attract them like that. Of course, you can't sit here and read your notes. But yeah, so this is the choice. Bugs or notes? Okay. The deathless state. Now here, deathless can be taken three ways. Right? If we say deathless state, what do we think of? Right? The spiritual world. Because there life is eternal. The impersonalists also take going to the Brahman as the deathless state. And the Karmakandi takes going to the heavenly planets as the deathless state. So in other words, this one statement is made such that all three levels can gain from it. But one has to know this. Then you interpret it. This is Mimamsa. You interpret it according to our philosophy. But others will interpret it according to their philosophy. So therefore, the Karmis will do it in one way, Jnanis in another. We have a third way. That's why many will say, oh, this is for Karmakanda. If you interpret it that way, it is. But if you don't, it's not. Though there are some details that are specifically for the Karmakandis. That is there. And then those don't apply to us. But there are other things that are common. It means the culture. In other words, if you're going to have a common culture in which karmis, jnanis, yogis, and bhaktis can work together, then they have to have a common value system. And everybody is able to take part in that. Right? And then they each have some specific ritual or detail that applies just to them. But that makes them who they are.
Manu always uses this ambiguity, like sometimes there's the point where if you eat meat, there's no sin, but then, you know, two lines down he says, doesn't mean you don't get karma for it.
Yeah, yeah, so. Like that. Yeah, because there's some people, they want to not follow these regulative principles. So then it's pointed out how you could follow them and it wouldn't be sinful. So then they think it's okay. But he points out just after that the word for the etymological, or the, how you say, grammatical breakdown of the word moksha is mam saha. Means mam, means me, and saha means with. Means I kill you this life, and you kill me next life. So you'll be born as the animal, you'll be killed. But that kind of is finessed. Most people finesse that one. They kind of just see, there's no sin. In other words, they won't go to hell for it. It doesn't mean they won't take birth as an animal and have to go through the same problem. So then that's the thing. If you take the Karmakanda stuff and apply it this way, they'll be free from sin, but it doesn't mean you won't get reaction. That's the thing. So the devotees, because they're not interested in that reaction, because they don't want to stay here to get it, so therefore then they leave.
Because also that discourse ends that actually the main point is non-violence.
Yeah. Because if one considers the whole thing, you know, that'll come up. If you consider the whole thing, one is to get that meat, you have to be violent. And even if one says, well, you know, you have to rip the potato out of the ground and all that, it says, then the other thing to consider is the origin of it. One was a nice little seed there, and the other one, but if you get into the organics of things coming from the womb, then it gets a little weird, you know, and that's what you're eating, you know. That's the whole point. So it points it out from two sides. Those who are more subtle, just that's good enough. Those who are more gross, then okay, let's get gross. You know. Okay. Then the source of the sacred law. Shruti, Smriti, the virtuous conduct and customs of holy men, and self-satisfaction. So these are the four different aspects. Shruti, which is the original, the Veda. Smriti is the Shastras written on the Veda. Like this, mana will be considered a Smriti. Then the virtuous conduct and customs of holy men. That'll be considered the third way to figure out what is practical. And fourth is self-satisfaction. So by balancing these four, then one can understand what should be done and what shouldn't be done. In other words, you start from the Shruti, go to the Smriti for its detail, because that's tradition. Then you see what the other sadhus and that, what they say is right. Then you try to do that, and if it works for you, it works. If it doesn't, then you go back and then try to find what does work. Does that make sense? Like that. You don't start with self-satisfaction, because that's always the trick here, is that you look down these four and goes, okay, well, Shruti, well, I don't know. Smriti, I don't know. Various, I forget. So I can relate to that. Okay, so what I like to do is what I do, and Manu says I should just do what I like to do. No, but you do what you like to do from the options that are there from the other three. That's the...
Does Shruti also mean knowledge?
Shruti means tradition. Means it's all, other than the Veda, all other books are Smriti. Well, Shruti means the four Vedas themselves. So anything else, like what we deal with, our main Shastras are all Smriti. Mm-hmm. Like that. And because the Smriti then gives the detail of what is the essence of Shruti and how to apply it. So that's what makes it special. So that's why one can deal with it. You know, be confident in dealing with it. Some don't. They'll only stick to Shruti. But then that's not proper, because Smriti also has to be followed. Like that. Manu's laws are fully founded on the Veda. So whatever is here in this work then has its root in the Veda. In other words, it's Smriti, but it's based on Shruti. So it's fully connected. With knowledge...
Sometimes the coins even have footnotes that says that it comes from Vedic or something.
Yeah. Sometimes they'll tell where it comes from, which Veda, and stuff like that. With knowledge, one should be intent on the performance of duties. So in other words, you should do your duty, but with knowledge. That's the whole point. See, the Prabhupada says, philosophy without religion is mental speculation. And religion without philosophy is sentiment. Right? So we see that you get these two worlds. The Westerners are in, they have no religion. They have philosophy. And so then they get into speculation. And we see the locals, the Hindus, then they have religion but no philosophy. And it's speculation. So the thing is the two have to be combined. Therefore, Prabhupada said, lame man, blind man. We always have to remember, the Westerner is considered the blind man. But the Indians, because they don't have the philosophy to apply it, they're lame. So that's the principle, is you put the two together. Then you have, it works. Like that. But the problem is, you know, each wants to function without the other. So with knowledge, one should perform. If you don't know why you're doing something, one should inquire. It may be that you don't know, no one said like this, but once you understand, we should be inquired. Why? Why do we do anything that we do? But we have to be intent on finding the answer to continue it, not be intent to find a doubt so we can give it up. Right? That's not honest. Honest is that we have these things and how to find it. Okay. Who obeys the law in the revealed text and sacred tradition achieves success. One should not doubt the Veda or the sacred law. One may not understand it and inquire, but one should never doubt the principle that the law is correct. Like that. One has to find the understand what's the principle behind it, have the knowledge, and then try to figure out how it applies. Like that. So if the principle is understood, knowledge of application is there, and one doesn't doubt, then one will work at it till one finds. Because the point is self-satisfaction must be there. That means you have to work at it till you're satisfied, yes, this works. who, relying on logic, treats with contempt the Shruti and Smriti, is an atheist. Right? And we have to remember this is being spoken in Brahma's court. So there's basically only devotees in that court. Like that. Because the point is, who gave the Shruti and Smriti? Krishna. So we say we accept Krishna, but we don't accept his scriptures. Right? Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. So we say we accept Krishna, but not the devotees. That's not correct. Or if we say we accept Krishna, but not the scriptures, that's also not correct. So, but it must be applied. So here, virtuous conduct and customs of holy men means that we see the Shruti and Smriti according to our acharyas. There are our holy men. So then how they say we follow it, that's what we do. And we have faith that that foundation that is there, then it works. The fourfold means of defining the sacred law. Okay, that was basically what it opened with. Shruti, Smriti, sadhus, and self-satisfaction. Study of the sacred law is prescribed for those not given to wealth or desire. It means those who can study this law means they're not interested in wealth or material desire. Because if one is, then one will, one, not understand it. He'll only see it through the economic or sense gratification, right? But this is Dharma. So Dharma can't be viewed through artha and kama, right? You can look at Dharma from moksha platform, but you can't look at it from artha and kama platform. You perform Dharma, you get artha and kama. They come automatically. But if you look at it from that angle, that that's the only reason to do it, then that person can practice the law but should not study it. That's the thing. Those people should study it from the Puranas. It means the history of Mahabharata, these others, you hear the stories and how they do, how Yudhishthira act, what he said when he was asked this question or this point came up. Then you apply that in your life. And that's basically how you see in India everybody's following. Is from hearing those stories and then applying that in their life. So then it works. It's a good system. But to actually see the law, understand the technicalities of the law, then that has to be the purpose. One's purpose is not sense gratification or wealth. You know, that's not your purpose. Those things may be there, but it's not your purpose yet. Yes, because see here, when you just take the essence out, you see it's just all philosophy. But when we get down to the rules, then there's a lot there that can be very much misconstrued unless you understand the right attitude. That's why we don't start directly with the laws. Until it's understood what's the proper angle to approach it, we don't approach the laws like that. Because unless it's understood, one won't understand what it's there for.
Sentiment?
Yeah, it means wealth and attachment. That'll be the whole thing. Because you see, if you look at it, any problems in the world come from attachment. Right? Duryodhan is attached to his position. Means of the world, his position in the world. The wealth, prestige, it's all attachment. Karna, his is also attachment. He wants the same thing. Right? So you look at all these things, whatever is there, then Ravana, it's attachment. Right? All these different things come up. Everything you look at is attachment. And if you look at anything where devotees have a problem between each other, you can simply look at it and you'll find the root is attachment somewhere. It's always. To something lower. You know, sensuality or something that they're going to gain from there, or they're losing, afraid they'll lose. Or go to the next level, some emotional interaction that is still pranamoy, that I'm getting this out of it, but, you know, you don't mind exchanging. You know, or economic development or justice, that's all pranamoy. Okay? The second level of consciousness, it's all there. Justice, your just normal emotions, you know, based on desire and this and lust, greed, anger, envy, jealousy, all this thing. and economics. That's all one package. So that's why you many times see business persons, then they get so bent out of shape if something's not moral. Because if morality's not there, that means then it could come up that thievery could become okay. And then all their money's gone. So that is their platform. Their economics only functions because there is morality. So therefore, they push justice the most. They're the most unforgiving people. Of course, for themselves, they're very liberal. But for others, they're unforgiving. While Kshatriyas and Brahmins work on a different level like that. They are forgiving because they understand what is the law and how everybody fits in. Because they work on the level of dharma and moksha. So it's a different level of consciousness. So does that make sense? So it's not that artha and kama is not there, but that's not their motive. Like a kshatriya, his motive is not artha and kama, it's dharma. Right? You'll see, Yudhishthira will go to the forest for dharma. A business person would never go to the forest over dharma. You know what I'm saying? If he just has to break a few rules and this and that and make everybody happy and then he makes his profit, he's laughing. And he thinks the guys that are standing on dharma are idiots. You know, why are they doing, what's the big deal? You know, a little honor, what's the big... Because for them it's profit. So that's how you identify these natures. Because all of them, it looks very similar. Oh, he's very religious. But you see what kind of religion. You know, where it's put. How it's applied. Then you can discern between them. Like that. This is how we're... So, yeah. So the point is knowing these, then you know how to take whatever position one's in and engage it in the Lord's service. Because you know actually what's the essence of it. Okay, he makes his money, everything must be just, but he gives in charity. He supports the Brahmins, he supports the temples. He himself follows sadhana, does sacrifice, you know, does all these proper things. But he still works in that field, no problem. Okay, it doesn't matter. That's the thing. The Vaishnava field, it doesn't matter. Like that. Does that make sense? Or? But when two sacred texts are conflicting, both are held to be valid law because they're written for different time, place, and circumstance. So what happens is it'll be said that, oh, this scripture contradicts that scripture, or even within the scripture it contradicts itself. No, it's just giving rules for different times or different people, different applications. So they're not. So the example is given of the yajna. Some shastras say it should be done before the sunrise. Some say it's at sunrise. Some say it's after. So then you say it's a conflict. So when are you supposed to do the yajna? It depends upon who you are. What is your main thing? If your main point is yajna, then you have to do it before in the Brahma Muhurta. Because whatever is your most important thing, that should be going on at that time. And then you're going to put other things as secondary. So therefore you do other things after, at sunrise and after sunrise. But if other things are more important for you, you're not a yajnic Brahmin, then you're going to do your important things before that. You're going to be doing your sadhana and other aspects at that time. And the yajna will be either sunrise or after sunrise. So they're not contradicted. They're all right. It's just you have to know where it is. If you find there's a contradiction, that means you have to go back to the level before that to find where is their origin. That's the principle. You want to say something? Oh, okay. Just you did the same. The twice born as students of the sacred law. So they're the ones who study the law. The land, and then it mentions the land of religious principles. Basically, then, you know, it's saying how India is the natural land of religious principles. Just people follow it here. You know, it's just the way it goes, you know. And of that, then it breaks it down. You know, that certain parts of India, you know, flowing along the bank of the river, the Ganga or Saraswati, those are the natural areas like that. And other areas are just natural for those who are not interested in the Veda. You know, when you leave those areas, then they don't really care about the Veda. It's just natural, inherently born like that. But the law is for everybody. So those who are interested, they take it up, and whoever they are, then they're called Aryan. And those who don't take it up, even if they live in Aryavarta, they're not considered Aryans like that. So Aryan is actually consciousness, though we see there's a natural consciousness of different places like that.
So twice born means first birth given by parents and second birth by the Buddha.
Yeah, like that. So that's for us as Pancharatrik, then basically everybody comes, so then they get qualified. But still, even then, because you're dealing with four different natures, then it's still you have to come in from the principles, like that. And someone who has issues then may have problem, because Manu doesn't worry about political correctness, because this is what's politically correct. Everything else is just what people happen to say is politically correct today, and then tomorrow they throw it out. You know, it's like, what do you call it? Orwellian's newspeak, you know. So that's political correctness. If you want to know what political correctness means, then you just put dash and put Orwellian newspeak, like that. And that's what it is. Because point is how do you say it's not politically correct? Why politically correct? Why not correct? Right? Why political correctness is the standard? Why not religious correctness? Or knowledge, you know, knowledge, correctness of knowledge? No, it's politically correct. So that right there is just politics. So whoever says, well, that's not politically correct, they're a politician. Of course, intelligent people know how to move with the political field, so they speak what's right to the right person at the right time. But still, their set of standards is not set by the public. Right? If it's set by the public, that means you're just a common person.
It kind of ties in with applying the principle to detail.
Yeah. So there it's just you're moving from one detail to the next as the whims move. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point. You know, it's just like you take, okay, let us take what is street fashion. It's changing, you know, every 6 months, right? If you really want to keep up with it.
Yeah.
3.5 now, okay. Like that. Depends how close you are to the catwalk.
Yeah.
So I remember it's like, What would be on the catwalk this year? I forget how long it would take. 6 months, I think, to hit New York, and it'd take 2 years to hit the West Coast. Like that, you know. So it was, you know, there's always a lag. But the principle is that's there. But now, if you want to go to a formal occasion, what do you wear? And how long has that been in fashion? Yeah, you go back hundreds of years. Hundreds. You know, probably 400 years, 500 years. So that's the point. Anything that's actually classic always works. And what's the street culture is always changing. So the devotees have to be very careful not to fall into the trap of street culture. We may have come from the street, but we should leave the street out of Krishna consciousness. You know, we may apply it in Krishna service, but it's not our culture. Like that. As soon as it becomes their culture, then it's lost. You know, Prabhupada wanted a cultural revolution. He didn't want to, you know, just wishy-washy people that just move with whatever somebody else establishes. Right? You know, the thing is, we're liberal, we're free thinking, but who sets the standards? Not that individual. Someone else. So now, who is that someone else? So, that's your choice. Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, you know, God and this great sages, or, you know, who knows who it is, you know, Michael Jackson or, you know, Britney Spears, somebody like that. You know, it's just, you know, who cares? You know? So that's the choice. That's what it comes down to. Like that. You know, and the principle applies. We may take it back a little further. Okay, maybe there's some people from the more conservative spheres of society, but why those are considered lasting and more better? Because they're basically going back to some religious principles. Good Christians, good this, good that. And where did religion come from? God. So we might as well go straight. We might as well get it directly from our line rather than taking it, you know, as it has come down to us through someone else. Like that. Does that make some sense? Okay. So then, okay, then we have ashram dharma. So now, from now up to the end of the sixth chapter, now it will deal directly with the ashrams. It'll go one after another. Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. But before that, it'll start the early rites. You know, it means the samskaras itself. It'll explain all the samskaras. After the samskaras, then it will explain the ashrams, how they fully function. So then, topic two. That's one thing. It didn't mention here, but in the end of the first chapter, then 25 topics. 25 or 24? 25. 25 topics are there that Manu mentions. And so these 25 will be discussed one after another, though I think there's two places where another topic gets stuck in the middle. I think in the third chapter we'll see that, and in the eighth chapter we'll see a subject that's stuck in the middle of two others, because it's important to understand fully that subject. But otherwise you'll see it just runs chronological. Yeah, it'll just continue where it left off. Means that's why you see sometimes we split them. You'll see it as it comes. So the rule, topic tool is the rule of the sacraments. So the purpose of the sacraments: conception and other sacraments sanctify the body in this life and after death. So conception is the first, and then it moves up from there. Then it mentions the sacraments that remove the taint derived from parents. It means when a child's born, he's born automatically already with sin that's coming from the parents, just because he's connected to them, right? Because he's made out of the seed of the parents, so, and their consciousness, so he naturally carries that. So one group removes that. And then the other sacraments, then other group makes one fit for spiritual progress. In other words, one purifies your material platform, and the other then uplifts you to the transcendental. So there's two kinds of samskaras. So that's why samskaras are said to be so important, like that. And the basis of that then is conception, like that. If that's right, then the other ones are so much easier. If it's not there, it makes it much more difficult, because then more things come through. Like that. It means that if Garbhodan is there, then it means that you limit who can come into that womb. It means only a pure person can come. Now, then whoever that is depends on the consciousness of the parents. But if it's not done, then it's potpourri. It means anything walking by can enter. That's the point. You know, like that. So the early rites, Jatakarma is the birth rites, just after birth, then those are performed. You know, for, it's called Medha Yajna, it's actually for giving intelligence. Like that. Because the Vedic culture needs a lot of brain, so therefore it's the next sacrifice. Namadeya is name giving, because one is under the rule of the different planets, so then according to the influence of the planet, one's giving a name, so that the influence of that planet will come through properly. Nishkramana and Anaprasana, the first leaving the house and feeding. So then the Nishkramana makes one fixed, and Anaprasana then aids the digestion, because one's health is basically solely dependent upon one's digestion. If that's good, health is good. Digestion is bad, it's bad. So therefore it's proper there. And then Chudakarna, then that's for purifying, because one's born with a hair, and so that hair is impure, so that's taken off. Then one is considered purified. Then next is Upanayana. So it gives the time, the dress. Then it says students wear upper and lower garments according to their varna. Then the girdle should... So this is then what we're taking here. What you see here is from the Brahminical. The girdle shall consist of munja grass. That's a kind of grass. It grows here in the field.
This is Brahminical.
Brahminical, yeah. Because Kshatriya wear a bowstring. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is what... I mean, in other words, the thread that they use to hold up their kopans. Mm-hmm. Like that. So Brahmins would use munja grass. The Kshatriyas would wear a bowstring. And the Vaishyas... I think it's wool. I'm not sure. They wear a wool dress also. Yeah, like that. Strings off a money belt. Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah, one of these ones you clip on in the back. Yeah. Like that. Okay. Like that. So for us, we just follow the Brahminical. So when we go through it, we'll just see that there. The sacred string shall be made of cotton. Let the staff be straight without a blemish and handsome to look at. They receive a staff. Because all these things have meaning. The staff is for guiding them. It has a certain potency in it. The belt is for chastity, that they'll be good brahmacharis. Like this, the different things, the upper cloth then I think is knowledge. So all these different things that they get to help. Yeah, means Brahmins, it goes up to the hairline here, Kshatriyas to this point here, this chakra between the eyes, and Vaishyas to the nose. So that way, in the Vedic culture, you can tell the difference between all of them, how they'll dress, everything. You can just tell by looking, and you know what ashram they're in, what varna they are, and even within the ashram, what's their status, like that. Because then immediately you know how to relate to them. If you're equal to them, senior to them, junior to them, what is your way you should interact with them? So then immediately then the social interaction functions. You know? Yeah. And it's all done with knowledge, so then everybody knows and they know how it works and why it's doing like that. You know, like you know, if they're not brahmacharis, then they're not going to be good members of the society. Otherwise, how are they going to be trained that they can actually lead society? You know? If they don't get trained, they'll have to be led. But if they get trained, then they can lead. Like that. It's a natural.
Like when they, for example, in the rules of begging, when they go from house to house to each place, yeah. the way they address the ladies, they know how.
Yeah, it means that the law, the statement is biksham, bhavati, biksham, dehi. Bhavati means, oh, blessed lady. Bhavati, biksham, alms, dehi, give. So that's how a Brahmin will say it. Then a Kshatriya will put the bhavati in the middle. So because the Kshatriya's thing is what they're doing. So he's coming saying biksham. He says, I've come for that. So we've set now exactly what I'm doing. Then he's respectful to the person that he's addressing. Then he says bhavati. And then dehi, you please give. But the Vaishya will put the dehi in the beginning because that's what he's actually after. So he'll go dehi, you know, biksham bhavati.
Yeah, like
yeah, he'll put it the other way. So it's give alms, good lady.
He doesn't get a pat on the head.
Yeah. So like that. So then because it matches the mentality, because that's what they're going out and, you know, what they gate from it. You know? Like that. The other one is just the religious duty, that I'm coming to do this duty. The other one is just, you know, he's come begging on, you know, it's part of his duty, but it's not, you know, the whole honor and all this thing. So it's you get these different flavors as it gets a step.
What would a sutra say?
They wouldn't go. It means for us, then they would, but no, they would be taken care of. So Shudra, he would live in his house, and then to study his art, he would either learn it under his own parents or under a relative or a community member. So then he would be taken care of by them when he learns like that. Or there may be a guild of them, so then they have something where they would take care. And then they would go to the Gurukul to learn if their art has a Shastric background to it. Let's say they're learning music. So then they go to the Gurukul in the afternoon at off hours if there is a teacher running a Gurukul who knows music, and then they would learn from him the Shastric side of it. From his teacher, he would learn the art of it, how to play the music. But from the Gurukul, then he would learn, you know, what's the Shastra behind it, why it is, what's the philosophical and metaphysical aspects of it. Like that. So that would be the tradition there. But for us, then, because they're devotees, then they all go. Or they can all go. If it works on a, you know, general principle, then everybody can go. But at I think it was 11, Prabhupada then had it split. So then you got Varnashram College. Like that. So Gurukul would continue to 25 for the Brahmin Kshatriya Vaishya, but Varnashram College would develop for the Shudras. Like that. Because if you look at it, then many people generally think Varnashram College means it's for all four. Mm-hmm. And Gurukul just is something up for the younger ages. That's why when you say you're running a Gurukul and they're in their 20s, they say that's not Gurukul. Gurukul's for kids. No, Prabhupada said 5 to 25. But 5 to 25 is for Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas. Because the Brahmin's education, his occupation is learned in the Gurukul. His studying, his teaching, his yajnas, his puja, you know, patana patana yajana yajana dana pratigraha, that he does in the Gurukul. They all four do it. So he's learning that there, and he's doing it there. So when he finishes, he can just open his own school. The Kshatriya, then they do those things, but they only keep three. They study the scriptures, they perform sacrifice, they give charity. But they don't teach others as an occupation. They don't receive charity as an occupation. They don't perform yajnas for others as an occupation. So, but all the religion and all the philosophy and the cultural things, shastric things, they've had to learn in the Gurukul. The practical application of that, they learn in the palace. Then they go back and then they live under the Rajguru and then under the ministers and the generals and all that. Then they teach him all the details of how to apply this knowledge he's already learned in the Gurukul. And a Vaishya, then they go and they develop the good character. Because if there's no good character, then they're not actually going to make that much money. The better the character, the more they make. Because the more they give in charity, the more they get back. So they have to have good character to be able to function, to give their taxes and not cheat, to do all these things. So they have to have good character. So that's what they learn. Because business, you don't learn in any school of the world, even today. These schools, business schools, no one's learning business in there. No businessman has ever been produced from any business school like that. And I've made this point in front of a room full of businessmen, and they all agree. The people the businessmen will hire are produced in those schools. So sometimes business families, their kids go to the school just to, it's a prestige thing, they get a degree, or there's certain modern techniques they want to know. You know, what's the latest thing in advertisement, or, you know, different things like that. How the crazy stock market works, and stuff like this. But it doesn't make them into a businessman. They're already a businessman. It just enhances. So they never go to the Gurukul for learning business. You don't learn it that. Prabhupada says the method is then they would go in and apprentice under another business person. And Prabhupada says he goes there. The father would bring the boy and he says, okay, can you teach him business? And he says he works for him for free. Mm-hmm. So in the beginning they just work him and this and that, folding this, whatever it is that they do, cleaning, running around, this and that. Because by that they get to know the place, they get to know the scene. And they can see the character. Because if the character is not good, how you'll teach him? Then as he starts to become, you know, reliable and responsible and steady, then that person he's studying under starts to give him money for different things. He did something good, he gives him something. So that inspires him. You know, that, oh, okay, good work gets money, gets profit. And then like that, then he starts teaching him the business. And then once he knows the business, then he sets up his own. So, you know, Prabhupada's already described. So it's not done in the Gurukul, it's done in the field. Like that. But the arts, then you have to learn under generally guilds or under a particular person. You have to learn it under somebody who's doing that art. You know, so then that goes there. So that requires that Varnashram College situation.
So Brahman is finished at 25, but Kshatriyas and Vaishyas at the same time?
Prabhupada's made the point is because we're going back to Godhead, so we're only engaging the conditioned nature we had in the Lord's service. We're not actually technically becoming occupationally these other things, though we may do them, but that's not our purpose. So therefore, he recommended up to 25 for those who can do. Otherwise, then whenever they come out, another age to come out is 22. Another age is 18, 19.
Because I'm not sure, but in mind of that, if the Brahmana has to learn like the four Vedas and stuff, he only finishes when he's 36?
32.
32.
Yeah. Still, yeah, like that. If he does three Vedas. If he doesn't do three, does two, does 24, does one, 16. Like that. So also that's the time. Yes.
So
Yeah, well, everything's meant to glorify the Lord. Even administration is meant to glorify the Lord. The teaching is meant to glorify the Lord. The money is meant to glorify the Lord.
Yes, practice the spiritual world.
Yeah, but who and what are and what varna are they in Vrindavan? Really? Means Krishna is an avidhut? Or is he a cowherd boy? Cowherd being the operative, how you say, whatever it is, adjective to the position of Krishna. Right? So their occupation, they make their money by tending cows. From that they get the milk and they things, they make ghee, that's how they sell it, then they pay their taxes that way. They plant the fields, they grow like this, and they pay taxes to the Kshatriyas in Mathura. And then there in Vrindavan they have all the Brahmins, and they come and do the pujas and this and that, and from that they give them charity. So it's the whole economic scene's going on, but there it's just for rasa.
So if you don't do it for occupational reasons, it's just...
Yeah, then it's not. It means in the Varnashram system, everybody would know. Sometimes you see some of the kings and the Brahmins are the best at the arts. Mm-hmm. I mean, even today, the best artists are either Brahmins, you know, still, or they're Brahmins who've been converted into Muslims. I'm saying the best Indian classical musicians are all Brahmins, or they're Muslims that previously were converted from Brahmin families. Like that. You check. All the top, they're all like that. Now and again you get someone from here and there, but they're not, you know. Ravi Shankar. Shankar is a Brahmin family, though they went into arts, but they're Brahmins. Like that. Ali Akbar, Aluddin Khan, they're a Brahmin family, but they're Muslims. But, you know, the Ali Akbar's father, he used to follow Ekadasi and go bathe in the Ganga. So in the house they would practice still the Brahminical, you know, traditions. But they would dress and in public they would be Muslims. Like that. So naturally from that they lose a bit, but, you know, it's kind of there. So then you see there's very few that are like pure... you know, how you say, Muslim lines. I knew one who was. But then even their line, they're the Brahmins within the Muslim line, what they considered. You
so
know?
What do you do if you see someone who has a calling which is very like artistic or in any way? What do you do?
It has to be engaged, but it's always developed later. Mm-hmm. If they're artists, then it can be developed right from the beginning. But if they're not, then it has to be fit in around other knowledge. Because first you have to develop the intelligence.
Okay.
See, because you have two ways you can present art. You have two fields. You can either, in the intellectual field, perform art.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can, within the field of emotion, you can use your intelligence to make variety. So that's the difference, you know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In other words, you have a structured field,
yeah.
And within that, then you make.
Yeah.
Or you just have some sentiment, and somehow or another, you have the good enough karma to get it out of your head and into some kind of, you know, some kind of sound, you know. You know. So that's the difference. So even there, it's good for them, even if they are artists, to develop the intellect first,
mm-hmm.
Because then they're. The music will have some more meaning.
Could the Brahmins be doing this because of times of distress or something?
It could be, but also they just may like it. You know, it's just low-end Brahminical activity to be. Because it says the top is to study the scriptures and teach.
Mm-hmm.
But they can be all these other things. You know, Manu mentions, I think, 3 pages of Brahmins who are performing other occupations that, you know, aren't the ideal to be invited for a Shraddha. You know, should be ones who study and teach, like that, you know, and musicians are one of them. Like that. Even Brahmins who are musicians.
What about painters? Like artistic?
Yeah, same.
In that sense.
Yeah, it's all same. Yeah, yeah. It means as an
occupation.
As an ability, you see the kings, Krishna knows the 64 arts. So your top kshatriyas all knew 64 arts. Your top women all knew 64 arts. So that doesn't make them shudras, like that. The point is arts, if that is your occupation, then it puts you as a shudra. But if it's your hobby, then that's considered an ornament. Like Hanuman is expert at music. Guru, everybody is expert in music. You know, so it's not just that he can, you know, how you say, bash demons and lift them. Yeah, though they're very, very, very expert, like that. You know, I mean, what music Hanuman can perform and stuff like that. You know, there wouldn't be people nowadays who could do that. So they're very expert. You know, Narad Muni. But his occupation is preaching. But he uses his music. But he's not a musician. You understand? That's the overlay. It's not dry. Like that. It's
the
not.
The voice is different. So then, therefore, the nature is different.
Yeah. Like that. So therefore, devotees may sing and dance for Krishna and, you know, do. Okay, but then it's sadhana. But you'll find that, let's say you have the 24-hour kirtan, some are doing it as sadhana, some are doing it as their occupation. So the ones that are sitting there and singing like an Ujjalota and this and that, that's occupation. Because you say they're not going to do that, they're going to sing anyway. That's the difference. You know, it's just like those before, those Brahmins, it was like this. Either you convert or we kill you. So their music's more important to them than the Brahminical culture. So they'd rather become Muslims and still be musicians than just say, you know, forget it. You know, like that. So like that, then that becomes more important. Therefore, it's an occupation. It's an occupation. And even then, as Brahmins, they're still performing all their Brahminical sadhana. Mm. So if that's there, and their whole culture and their house is Brahminical, and all their interactions are Brahminical, but to make their money, they're that, then it's just very low-end Brahminical, like that. Mm. So you have to see what is the mentality behind it? Is it their sadhana? Is it how they make their money? Even if they make money that way, but what is their purpose in it? To please the Lord or to make the money?
So if the mentality was to please the Lord, that they were making money from it,
then it's a different. Then it also is there.
Occupation.
It depends. You have to see it. It may be, but then they may still be within that Brahminical category. But yeah. You know, so that's why like Bhishma got stuck, because the law, the subtleties of the law are very fine. So you have to be able to see what's the prominent moods and what's the whole goal behind it and this and that and the methods that are used and like that. So that's why it becomes very difficult. You know, it's just an easy thing. Okay, you put up, if you're doing this, then you're this, if you do that. But it doesn't always work like that. You know, like that. Because they have to have these balancing things. Like we said before, anybody would like to be the manager, be in charge, but how many protect who's under them? How many devotees feel unprotected in the sphere that they're working in? So that means the person above them is not a kshatriya. Like that. You know, so like that. So if they're efficient, get things done, but they feel unprotected, probably a vaishya. Like that. You know, if they feel protected, that's there. If it's nice, it's a great place, but it's a bit spaced out, then it may be a problem. You know? Unless that Brahmin's field is as administration, then it will be proper. Then you'll see that they will protect. And when the kshatriya is doing it, there is economics, because people are inspired. The Brahmin's doing it, there's economics, maybe less, because they spend time doing others. If he's good at managing, then there'll be both. And if you put a shudra in there, it's just trouble. Shudra means by mentality, like that. They act like one. Not that devotees never are, but they act like that. Then there's always trouble. So like that, it applies, it works. It's just a managing system, you understand it. It's not a matter of prestige or that, it's just a matter of reality, you know. You want to serve soup, you don't pick up, you know, the slotted spoon. You know, one could say you're discriminating against the slotted spoon. Why can't the slotted spoon serve the soup? It really wants to serve the soup, you know, like that. And I mean, just because it has a few holes in it, you know, you have to discriminate against it. And I mean, you know, what is this? This is just politics and that. And you could go on and on and on. This is just, this is what I mean. It's just newspeak. It sounds impressive, sounds intelligent, but it's not practical. The point is they can manage or they can't manage. That's all. That's the question. It's not a matter of prestige or he joined first or he's Prabhupada's disciple or, you know, he's this. That's not the point. Can he manage? If he can, do it. If there's no one there to manage, okay, whoever was willing to step forward, yeah, do it. But if it comes between someone who can manage and someone who's so-called a senior devotee or this or that, then what's the meaning? Right? Because he can still be the senior devotee and go back to Godhead if he doesn't manage. You know, but the manager, that's how he engages himself, plus by him doing it, then everybody else will be engaged. And the senior man, you may have respected him, but then the whole place falls apart and no one's engaged. So that's the point. It's just practical, but it's so practical, it's scary. Because it's reality. So it's not that, well, that's your opinion or maybe this or that. No, this is God's opinion. And now it's just, you know, that's what it comes down to.
So like these are 5 points in the world, could it have been when Draupadi asked the several things if Yudhishthira lost himself?
Yeah, he got stuck there because the point is that the wife, you can't separate. Manu says, by sale, by throwing her out of the house, you can't separate the husband and wife. He says they're connected. So his point is when he's lost, she's already lost. So there's no question of gambling her. So they couldn't have won her by gambling because when they got Yudhishthira, they already got her. But at the same time, Yudhishthira agreed to gamble her. So then that seems to be contrary to the law. You know, so then, since he did, then possibly they did win her. But at the same time, if she can be separated from him, then he was lost first. So then he can't gamble her because she's not connected with him based on that principle. So he got confused. Because he was just trying to figure out the law rather than, hey, you know, here they're dragging Draupadi out in the thing and says this is nonsense. He was just getting stuck on the law. So that's why you have to be able to go beyond it. You know? So that's the principle. You know, because the point is that even she's lost, she still would be their maidservant, the Kaurava's maidservant, but as the wife of Yudhishthira. So you can't just take a maidservant, somebody's wife, and drag them out there and take their clothes off. You can't do that. It's not allowed. You know, they may be maidservants, they may be shudras, but they still the institution of marriage is still sacred.
So the wife of the servant doesn't serve the master.
Does. But he still doesn't have a relationship. The master doesn't have a relationship to her directly. It's through the husband, mm-hmm. Though she may come and do direct service and clean and serve and do this and that. But it's not separate. In other words, the respect that is due to the wife of another man has to be applied. So they separated the two off. That's why it's considered irreligious. So their dealings with her is not supported by the scriptures, because you can't separate the two. But the confusing element is then why did Yudhishthira allow? But Yudhishthira is going on Shakuni's challenging, because Shakuni is trying to get at that point. That's his whole purpose. Because he wants to kill Duryodhana and all his brothers. He doesn't just want to get one of them. He wants to get them all and finish them off as a dynasty. So there's basically only one way to do that. Well, there's two ways to do it. One is absolute atheism, you know, an opposition to the Lord and his devotees. And the other, on the material platform, is to insult a chaste woman. Either of those will destroy the dynasty. Like that. Manu mentions it. He says, you insult a chaste woman? That whole dynasty, not just the person who did it, his whole family, everyone connected to him, they will all evaporate like magic. It's gone. You look at, not one of Duryodhana's brothers survived. The Kurus are finished because of that one thing. Ravana, everything finished. So that's the point. So he knew that this is how he get him. He gets him to go against the Pandavas, they're pure devotees. Whenever it comes up about Krishna, he's just doing some mystic things. Don't worry about that. Okay, he starts on the universal form, but that's just some mystic thing. Don't worry about it. So he got him on all points. His whole purpose was just to wipe him out.
And he didn't care the process of being
self-dying. Yeah, he's not worried because he's the last one left in his dynasty that Duryodhana killed every last one of them. So he's been kept alive just to avenge their death. So that's why he acts in the way he does. So he gets killed for it. But at the same time, as he knew he had done his job. Yeah. But Duryodhana didn't know. Okay, so then I guess we should stop here. It's 4:20. So then on Tuesday we'll continue with this and then go through into the Brahmacharya Ashram. Like that. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Govinda Premananda. Parikram next week. Oh, with the Radhanath Maharaj Parikram. That you're talking about? I don't know. I've heard they're here, but I don't know what it is until then. We can see. If it's happening, then, you know, whenever it's not happening, then we'll, you know, then we'll continue. Like that. We'll have to see. I heard, what's the date today? 18th. I heard that some show up tomorrow to make arrangements, so probably it'll be more clear what's going on once they show up.
I've heard that it starts on the 22nd.
So what day is, what would that, today is